This is Jörg Rödel from AMD. He's doing some kernel work on I/O MMUs, something a few of you might not have heard of, but it's important for some features for virtualization, for example, and probably used on your systems as well. And he will talk about user space I/O and other recent developments in I/O MMU land in the kernel. So Jörg, your stage.
Yeah, hello, and welcome to my talk. First, a question: is there anybody in the audience who wants to hear this talk in English? Okay, then I talk in English. So I talk about user space I/O and I/O MMU stuff. What this means is, first, I want to introduce what user space I/O really means. So basically what I'm talking about later. Then I give an overview of the current support of user space I/O in Linux with KVM device pass-through included. And then I talk about a future interface which is about to be merged, or which is at least in development, which is VFIO. And for the IOMMU part, I will also talk about the AMD IOMMU version 2, which also has some features regarding user space I/O. So first, what does user space I/O really means in this talk? In this talk, it means that a user space process gets safe access to a hardware device. Entschuldigung. Right, safe access to the user space. So whereas being safe is the hard part here, because if you access a device from user space, you can't trust the driver anymore as if it were in the Linux kernel. So you must protect the system from a misbehaving user space process that can do anything with the device. So that any bugs in the device cannot destroy your system or bring your system down or something like that. So what is the difference to a kernel driver? So at the bottom you have the hardware and the Linux kernel on top of it, and the Linux kernel has drivers for network cards, disks, and so on. And then there are devices where you might have a user space driver for. For this device, the kernel gives direct access to a process. So the driver is basically completely or in part moved to a user space. So what do we have in the Linux kernel so far to support this? I'm mostly focusing on PCI in this talk. For PCI, we have access to the config space and the PCI bars for quite a long time. What was missing in the beginning was support for delivering interrupts from a device to user space, and support for DMA to and from user space from a hardware device. So what you were able to do in the beginning was write to the device registers in the config space and to the PCI bars, but anything that involves interrupts or DMA was impossible. To come around these limitations, two features were developed with different targets in mind. The first was the user space I/O framework, which was which basically solves the interrupt delivery problem. And then we have KVM device pass-through, which is about assigning a PCI device to a virtualization guest, which is a special case of user space I/O. Because in KVM, the guest is basically a user space program, and when it wants to access a device, it's basically user space I/O. So first, some details about the user space I/O framework. it solves the interrupt delivery problem. Therefore, it requires for every device some special code in the kernel. So the driver is, so only parts of the driver are in user space. You still need a kernel stub which registers in an interrupt handler and acts the interrupts to the device and notifies the UIO framework about the interrupt. User space basically opens a file, a device file, a dev UIO something, and reads on that device. And every time when an interrupt comes in, the device becomes readable, and user space knows that there was an interrupt. As I said, it still requires a kernel-specific part. And another problem is that there's no safe way up to now for doing DMA with the device. The next thing is KVM device pass-through. It solves the interrupt and the DMA problem. One advantage over UIO is that KVM device pass-through already supports multiple interrupt vectors per device. So when you have a PCI device which has MSIX and four or more interrupt, different interrupt vectors, you can have you can handle all these different vectors with KVM. Beyond UIO, you can't distinguish between different interrupt vectors on your device. How does KVM solve this problem? There is a feature in Linux which is called EventFD. The neat thing about this is that you can connect two different parts in the kernel with EventFDs, and then all communication will directly work into the kernel. So what happens is that you have an EventFD for each interrupt vector, and KVM connects each of these file descriptors to its internal APIC implementation. So that when an interrupt comes in, it can be directly delivered to the guest without going through user space. And KVM device pass-through has also support for DMA. This works in that way that an IOMMU is used, which is basically required for DMA and KVM. And this works by just mapping all KVM guest physical memory directly to the device, one-to-one, so that the guest operating system sees the same addresses as the device, basically. Downside is that this solution is very KVM-specific and can't be used for general user space drivers. So in the beginning, I talked about safety. With user space I/O, the safety depends heavily on an IOMMU, especially when you want to do DMA, or when you, and also when you want to handle interrupts, because today interrupts are nothing more than special DMA packets, and you need an IOMMU to filter these, to not allow a hardware device to send arbitrary interrupt messages. And an IOMMU to restrict the rest of the DMA to prevent that a device can access all physical memory, so that you can basically read out a memory dump or something, or overwrite your kernel image or something, so that you can put control on that. Another problem with safety is that the IOMMU has to know which device is actually sending a request to the system. On PCI, this is the IOMMU detects this by a PCI device ID. The problem is that when legacy PCI bridges come into play, that this doesn't work reliably, because on every upstream package that arrives at such a bridge, the bridge may exchange the device ID with its own, so that you can't reliably distinguish between any device behind this bridge. This problem is solved with PCI Express, where you can distinguish between every device, basically between every function on every device, given that the device has no bugs. Some more illustration for this, how this looks in a typical system. In the root, you have the PCI root bridge with an IO MMU. Then you have different PCI lanes, different PCI Express lanes with the PCI Express devices on it. One of these PCI Express devices is a PCI Express to PCI bridge. And on this bridge, you have this old serial 32-bit PCI bus. This problem is not really handled by current KVM device pass-through. So it's today basically not possible to assign a 32-bit PCI device to a guest because the IOMU will not allow you to do that. Or the IOMU driver will not allow you to do that. So how is this problem going to be solved? We had some discussion around this problem, and the solution is something called IOMU groups. So we define a new entity in the kernel, which is a group and where we can attach devices to. In the end, we don't work on devices anymore. We work on groups of devices, where a PCI Express device forms a group of containing a single device, for example. So, and a 32-bit PCI bus forming a group with potentially multiple devices. The first implementation of this is already merged, but it was not perfect, and there were a few objections from the, I think, power side, and we get some advanced support for it merged soon, I think. So how is this going to be used in the future? The main part is, the main user will be the virtual function IO framework, which is currently in development at Red Hat. It was started at Cisco Systems, I think 2 years ago or so, and then handed over to Alex Williamson, a developer at Red Hat. And VFIO provides same group management for devices, which is not present in KVM device pass-through. It provides a user space IO MMU interface, which is more flexible than what KVM provides today. And it has support for multiple interrupts. And therefore, there's no specific in-kernel part necessary for the device or for every device. So you can basically write a user space driver for a PCI device without needing a kernel part, if the device is new enough. So your device certainly needs to support MSI for that. How is grouping solved there? I basically already explained this. So how is the user space interface of VFIO? So like UIO, VFIO creates a device file in dev for every device it handles. An important difference is that if the device file belongs to a device which is in a group with multiple devices, then every device in that group has to be owned by VFIO, otherwise you can't open that file. This is important because all devices in a group share one IO address space. And so when one device is used by VFIO, it can't be used by a typical Linux driver anymore, because VFIO changes the address space without the other driver knowing this, and this would lead to unexpected behavior. What can you do with that device file? When you open it, you can mmap the PCI bus into your user space, and you have an IOCTL interface for creating event FDs for each interrupt. This maintains compatibility with KVM, because KVM device pass-through already uses event FDs, so this can be easily used again. And with that concept, it has the same advantages of as KVM device pass-through. It supports multiple interrupt vectors per device. So how is DMA solved in VFIO? VFIO strongly relies on an IOMMU being present in the system. So when you don't have an IOMMU, this all won't work, which is a disadvantage over UIO, for example, where I don't need it. But UIO also don't support DMA, so it doesn't need it. So you have a new IOMMU interface. U stands for user. So you can set up IOMMU mappings from user space. The advantage over the old KVM device pass-through code is that you can say in user space which part of your address space do you want to have mapped to which address for the device. So in the current KVM device pass-through, you basically have somewhere in your QEMU a big part of memory, which is your guest physical memory at offset, say, 2 gigabytes or so. And the device address space starts at this boundary. So virtual address 2 gigabyte would be device address 0. With the UIOMU interface, you are not tied to this restriction. You can basically map 2 gigabyte virtual to 2 gigabyte device address. The big advantage is that you can directly use virtual pointers, or that you potentially can use your pointers in your program as DMA addresses in your program then, when you set up the mappings in this way. Though this interface is way more flexible than current KVM device pass-through. One downside is that the memory still has to be pinned, so everything you map into the IOMMU address space can't be swapped out. Because for most devices, there is a way to fold these pages in on demand. Your DMA will just fail and the device will go crazy. So the conclusions about VFIO, it's basically a superset of VFIO and KVM device pass-through with a more flexible user space IOMMU interface. It supports multiple interrupt and DMA by requiring an IOMMU, which is the downside of this VFIO interface. So the second thing I want to talk about, which is somewhat similar but not entirely, is the AMD IOMMU version 2, which is also mostly about user space IO. The new IOMMU has support for user space DMA, as I said it, but it also has support for multiple address spaces per device. So you basically can have multiple user space processes accessing the same device and doing user space I/O with that device. The cool thing is on 64-bit x86, you can even share the page tables of the process with the IOMMU. So you just take the page table of the device of the process and attach it to the IOMMU, and the IOMMU will translate this page table. And one other neat feature is that the device can generate page faults using the IOMMU. Another downside is that a device-specific kernel part is necessary. I explain why later. And we have basic kernel support for that already upstream. So the IOMMU part is upstream. As I said, a device can share by multiple user space processes, because the device can access multiple address spaces. Now we come to the point why a kernel part is necessary. This requires an internal context to be maintained for each address space, and this needs to be initialized and set up by an internal driver part. And the kernel driver also needs to manage interrupts. And the good thing about these address spaces is that it's allowed to page fault. So there is a way to recover from a fault situation. When the device wants to access a page which is currently swapped out or was not in memory yet, the device can issue a page fault. Then software will make this page available and tell the device that the page is there, and the device can access the page without a failure condition. So pictures tell more than 1,000 words. So this is the picture. So you have one device, one kernel part driver, which maintains different device contexts. The number of contexts supported is dependent on the device you have. So the device needs to support that. You can't do that with any device you have. The device needs to support that. Then you have different processes accessing these different device contexts with a user space part of the driver. A typical example where this might be useful is, for example, a piece of hardware which does crypto acceleration. Then you can have a context for each process wanting to do cryptography, and the process talks directly to the device, saying which algorithm it wants to use and where the data is that wants to be encrypted or decrypted, and things like that. Demand paging. I already mentioned this. This requires special device support. So when a page isn't available and needs to be swapped in, the device needs to signal this condition. And this needs special device support. Especially the device needs to support two capabilities. One is ATS, which is the address translation extension, which allows the device to cache IOMMU translations. And then you need the PRI capability, which is the page request interface, which does forwarding in the end. When a PRI happens, or when a page request happens, it is the device signals it to the IOMU, and the IOMU tells it to the software, and the software sends a PRI response. How does it look in the end? This is why ATS and PRI is required. They both work together. They are also spec'd into the same specification. The device sends an ATS request, which is a translation request to the IOMMU. The IOMMU works data structures, page tables, and all things, and tries to translate that address. When that fails, it sends the device an ATS failure. Now the device can decide what to do. When it has faulting support, it sends a page fault request to the IOMMU, which is forwarded to software. In the end, this causes an IOMMU interrupt, and this is handled. The page fault is handled in software like any other page fault in user space. When software is done with the page fault and the page fault could be successfully resolved, it sends back a page fault completion message to the IOMMU, and the IOMMU forwards this message back to the device. And the device now knows that the page fault it sent before is resolved. And then the device reissues an ATS request, which now should be successful, and sends back an ATS success. And gets back an ATS success and can now access that address at once. So what are the conclusions about this? The IOMMU v2 allows to have parts of the user space drivers, parts of the device drivers in user space, but not all of it. All of the driver. The goal is not really having a device driver in user space. The goal is having fast data transfer between user space processes and I/O devices. Another important point: that the device needs to support all of this in hardware, but therefore no memory pinning is required. So you can still swap pages out and in as you want. And the kernel part for the IOMMU is already upstream. What's still missing is support for the devices which will have these features. Now, this brings me to the end of my talk, and I'm open to any questions you might have.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes, but you can't buy them.
I can't buy them yet.
Right. Ich weiß nicht, ob es eine ist.
Okay, then I will speak loud.
Fine with me.
We had a little talk before, and you said that IOMMU is caring a lot also for the security things.
Right.
So a device will not do strange things in memory.
Right. The IOMMU doesn't have any firmware to be loaded, so you can't solve it. It depends on the problem, but generally you can't solve an IOMMU hardware problem with a firmware update.
Okay.
So there's no firmware like you have for GPUs or network cards, which you can just load in. Everything is fine.
So you have to be very careful when designing the IOMMU.
Yes. The IOMMU is not a very complicated kind of device. It just has to work page tables and such. It's not as complicated as a 10 gig network card or something. So it's less likely to have such problems.
That was nonsense because it was really a completely different task, and then everybody agreed on making a new subsystem called VFIO, and so it turned out. So it's
right.
In some press news, it sometimes sounded like now UIO is obsolete because it's superseded by VFIO, but that is not the case. It's just another use case, and there are still many use cases for UIO.
UIO basically supports a larger set of devices than VFIO. For VFIO, you need newer devices which support MSI and which behave in the right way according to some newer PCI specs. And with UIO, you can program older devices and more limited devices, and the set of devices is larger in UIO.
Okay, there's one final question, but then we have to go to the next talk. because we are late already.
Just really quick, for the IOMMU version 2, does it have also like a TLB cache or TLB inside, and or does it always access the mapping in the memory?
The IOMMU itself has a TLB where translations are cached, and the devices itself have a TLB where translations are cached. Right. The kernel actually needs to know if the device has a cache and needs to flush that cache also when it does a flush.
Okay. Thanks, Jörg, for your talk. Next will be in 2 or 3 minutes, Stefan Seifried, about configuration and analyzing kernel crash dumps. Shouldn't take long.